Hello, this is Universal Soul Love. This is Lana Love.
And David Love.
Welcome to our show. Today we have Reverend Mark Lyle with us. Mark is an interfaith chaplain who works at a hospice as well as a psychiatric unit in the hospital. And Mark has been developing mediumship and has his own Point Shore Star Circle, which he has been in for many years.
Right. Mark is a good friend of mine. I met him through hospice. I did training with him and learned a lot, and I actually developed a lot of my own personal beliefs about mortality and the eternal soul and just volunteering in hospice, and I also worked in with hospice patients, and it was a life-changing experience for me, and I owe a lot to Mark for the insights I gained during that time, which was about almost 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'd also like to mention that Mark has a website for his mediumship circle, which is...
It is star-circle.us.
Yep. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Hello, Mark.
Thank you
for joining us.
Oh, I'm so excited to have the chance to be here together with you both.
Yeah, it's really great to reconnect with you like this. I just want to bring up your website, and you had something really interesting to say on your website that I found really profound. One of the members of your circle wrote, "We are a group of mediums who have drawn together to bring light where there has been darkness, and to share the love of those who have passed with those who remain." And I guess that was an inspired writing, and I'm very familiar with inspired writing.
Yes, the words actually came from Spirit Sersha, who was an Egyptian teacher who has worked with the First Spiritual Temple, and actually going back to the 1880s here in Boston, when the original temple was built, the organization at the time was called the Working Union of Progressive Spiritualists. And that was a group that was inspired to be formed in the year 1883. There was a very important benefactor, the original trustee, Marcellus Seth Ayer, who was a successful businessman in Boston, and he had reached a point in his life where he wanted to give back. He knew that he had been blessed in his life, and he wanted to give back and share his wealth. And he was holding spirit gatherings in his home in Westchester Park, section of Boston, the South End. And he had a full-form materialization of spirit appear before him, and the spirit said, "It is time to form this union, this organization." So, as I said, that was 1883, and then they built the temple in the Back Bay section of Boston that was, at that time, was a actual marshy section of the town that was being filled in with landfill. And this huge, very strong, beautifully carved building was erected in 1885.
Wow, it's a great story. And so you have Star Circle as a group of about 12 mediums that meet at, you live in a church, right? You bought a church.
That's right.
There and...
Yeah, I live in a former church building in the town of Amesbury, Massachusetts. And the church building that I'm currently living in was built originally as a Christian church, but it was a non-denominational Christian church. It was founded to try to bring together, to unify the teachings of Christ without the separation and delineations of different denominations of Christianity. So this building was a church until 1983, and then it closed and became a single-family residence, and my wife and I purchased it 3.5 years ago and are in the process of renovating the building. Yeah.
That's great. And so you're almost like a Christian, your background is in Christian spiritualism, which is very similar to mine. I've been with the Christian tradition, I have a Christian background, and I've also been with a number of spiritualist churches, and I've done psychic development groups, and I've worked with mediums over the years, and I've seen some amazing things that have blown me away, some of the things I've heard. You know, with my own background as an investigator, I tend to be evidence-based, and I've seen some things that are, I've heard things that are truly amazing and hard to refute. So I share your background. Of course, that's why we connect, because we relate on many levels with our beliefs and our ideas.
I like the idea of an interfaith minister.
Yeah, tell us chaplain. About your background. And
can you tell us about that and how you got to be that? And how does one get to be ordained as an interfaith minister?
Well, there are a few places in the United States that do have an interfaith program. And I attended the Chaplaincy Institute of Maine, which is located in Portland, Maine. And but let me go backwards. I was actually baptized and raised in the Catholic Church in Florida. Mm-hmm. And it was a very liberal Catholic parish because it was on the campus of the University of Florida. And then back in the 1970s, the priest there, Father Gannon, I remember very clearly having the music in church was Beatles and George Harrison style of music, which I really resonated with. And they would sometimes do mass outdoors. He called it mass on the grass. It was nice. But as I grew a little bit older to question things, I found the ritual of Catholicism, both the structure was comforting, but there were a lot of spiritual questions that I was struggling with. I wasn't getting answers to. And as I entered my teen years, I started to experience these disturbing panic attacks. I didn't know what they were at the time. But whenever I started to contemplate the larger questions of the universe, I would start to actually feel like a chemical shift. Mm-hmm. I actually could feel it like in my neck, into my head. And I could almost taste a change that led to these panic attacks. And when I tried to figure out what was going on, it would usually be triggered by worrying about what happens when we die. Is it just, is that it? Everything's over? We don't exist anymore. And it was, I guess I was really struggling with these existential questions. Mm-hmm. So as I went to college, I began to open myself up to ideas, exploring some ideas around spirit communication, and I found some interesting books. My siblings and friends and I began to explore some of the ideas that came out of the so-called New Age movement, and it led me to actually leave Florida. I moved to Boston in 1988.
Right.
And that's shortly after I arrived in the city, my wife and I discovered the first spiritual temple, which I had just spoken of. Mm-hmm. So to me, beginning to learn about life after death, exploring how to open our sensitivities to reach out to spirit, to reach out to God or guiding spirits,
the creator,
whatever sure. names you want to use.
Sure.
I began to have experiences that really brought an authenticity to spirit, interacting with spirit, and having a sense of loving guides and guardians that are around us. It became a very reassuring place to be, and I found that my panic attacks and my anxieties dissipated and then disappeared.
And it's interesting that you brought that up, and certainly that's one of the reasons I wanted to interview you is because I see you as a chaplain and as an interfaith minister, and as one who works in hospice dealing with death and loss every single day. And you became instrumental in me developing my beliefs around mortality, physical existence, and the living life in the present moment, realizing that life is short and you can go at any time, and so you need to be happy now and live your life now, and also realizing that we have an eternal soul and we really have to have faith in life beyond life or life after life. And it's so important because for me, it was the most important spiritual insight I ever had, because once I realize that I need to live life now and that it's going to be okay when I get to the what I call the finish line, as Apostle Paul said, you know, I finished the race, I kept the faith, and having a little bit of a mental block. One of my favorite sayings, anyhow, that passage about basically just reaching the finish line and realizing in the end it's going to be okay, but we do live life now. It's sort of that paradox and that balance, because once you overcome your fear of death, life becomes somewhat easier when you reflect back on that and you realize that once you're on the other side, all of these things that have happened, they're not going to matter so much. I mean, they're going to just look like experiences, and that's really all you're going to take with you is your memory of those experiences. So you learn to not fear things in life as much. You overcome that, your fears.
That's true, David. At the same time, I also believe, even though I believe, I also believe in reincarnation, mm-hmm. I believe that our individual souls can choose to return to the physical plane and to have continued maybe relationship exploration with group souls. Even if we believe that we might have multiple lives or chances to live, I still believe that we want to make the most, maybe we I don't want to use the word should, but maybe we should make the most of our abilities and potential in this lifetime. And so that's, I guess I've found a place where I've stopped worrying about death, but I've also been motivated to make the most of my time here. And I do find it helpful to, I find my work in the hospice field allows me or inspires me to appreciate each day to the fullest, because I'm reminded, as you said, on a daily basis that we cannot assume that we're all going to live to be 95 in good health. You know, we have to really enjoy
life
each day.
Life is a gift. One time, what did you say about that, Lana? About life is a gift. That's why we call it
That's why we call it a present.
Yeah.
That's what we call the present moment.
Right. Yeah. That's yesterday's history. Tomorrow's a mystery. Yeah. And today is.
And I know you and I have talked before about the idea that the past is in the past, and it doesn't necessarily make the future. That you can turn around your life at any moment once you understand that we're living life in the now. And that's a gift. You can change your life in any moment as long as you're alive.
Yes, that's so true. We humans can too easily create a structure of beliefs that can be self-limiting.
Limited beliefs.
Yeah. And the nature of personal reality that Seth channeled, that was channeled by Jane Roberts, it was a very influential book for me.
Yeah, me as well.
When I read that back in the 1980s, the idea that every moment that we hold thoughts, we are sending out energy that then attracts experiences to us. And what I think the one thing from that book that really stayed with me the longest was the idea that the beliefs we hold become almost self-fulfilling prophecies. Because if you believe one set of beliefs, you will look for things in the world that will confirm that belief. So you actually attract those things that reinforce your belief system. But we also need to remember that we can change our beliefs and then therefore change those experiences that we're bringing into our life pattern.
That's a very important concept, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really important.
It's very powerful.
That's one of your strong points, Manifest 101. Lana's very good at, you know, those ideas around sort of manifesting reality by changing your beliefs and realizing that we're the ones that are responsible for creating our reality, our future reality.
So that's something in therapy with the patients. We talk a lot about, you know, your belief systems and your perceptions and how you influence your emotions with this. That's certainly very true.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd love to ask you a bit more about your hospice work.
Yeah.
But before we do that, I'd love you to tell people how you were ordained, because the story is just breathtaking.
Oh, sure. Well, the Chaplaincy Institute of Maine is a 2-year program that I didn't know about it until a whole series of events that happened in 2008. My mother had just been diagnosed with lung cancer down in Florida, and she had surgery, and we thought the surgery on her lung to remove the cancer was successful. I spoke to her on the phone within 12 hours after she came out of surgery, and she sounded really upbeat. She sounded great. And I was relieved, because the doctors had said it looked like she would be, the surgery meant she would not need chemotherapy or radiation. Well, things shifted dramatically. Within the next day, she had a lot of complications, and what ended up happening, she went on a ventilator and never got out of the hospital. This same week that I was going down to visit her in the hospital, I was in my living room at home. It was a quiet afternoon. I was feeling kind of lazy, but something drew my attention to a folded newspaper on the floor, the local community newspaper, and I picked it up. And I felt like there was something on the back. I looked at this announcement, a calendar of events for an interfaith church service that was happening in town at a historic meeting house that was built in the 1700s. This building was almost never open. It's only open maybe once or twice a year because it's a very historic property. And I thought, oh, I've never been inside that building. I could go to an interfaith service and I could see the inside of this beautiful meeting house. So I went to the service, and there I met a recent graduate of the Chaplaincy Institute of Maine, Annie Tunstall. And so within a matter of days, I went from not knowing about this program to finding out that not only was this program accepting applications, but they had weekly classes in my hometown of Amesbury. Oh. And the monthly gatherings up in Portland, Maine would be easy for me to get to. Mm-hmm. So I flew down to Florida to see my mother in the hospital, and I learned that there was an interfaith chapel in the hospital. And so it all came together really very synchronistically. Oh. I was praying for my mother in this beautiful chapel that was decorated with ceramic decorative arts. And that's another aspect of my interests. I'm a visual artist who likes to work with ceramics as well. So it all came together in a matter of days, where I was visiting the intensive care unit and I saw how many patients were not receiving visits from any family members or friends. And I thought, it was more than I thought. I felt the calling to become a chaplain. And so it's a long-winded answer to your question, but basically the two-year program involved 300 hours of volunteer internship plus all the weekly classes. It was a very solid foundation to become a chaplain. And the ordination process was a surprise to me, because I'd never attended anything like this. There were about, I think I had about 15 classmates. We graduated together, and when each of us was ordained, the abbot and an abbess came up to me, and then a group of about 35 ordained ministers gathered around each of us, and it was a communal laying on of hands.
Wow.
And when the words were spoken and the hands were laid on, I did feel almost like an electric charge that pulsed through my body, and I thought and felt, okay, I'm ready to begin my work.
That's
yeah,
a little charge to your life, a little push.
It was
electric shock sort of
yeah.
Introduction.
Wow, that was the vital force coming in through the universe to you. Sort of that was the little Reiki charge there.
Yeah, and actually, Reiki is another thing that I had begun to study while I was in the chaplaincy program. I did my level 1 and level 2 Reiki training. Yeah. And then after I became ordained, I went ahead and did my advanced training and then became a Reiki master.
Lanner and I do that as well. Of course, I remember Reiki was something that
we talked about in the
we had talked about the training, and yeah. Some of the volunteers did Reiki for the patients. It's actually accepted in the hospitals and some of the hospitals and hospice facilities
right.
in Massachusetts as a sort of a therapeutic touch, healing
modality. We're finding, more and more we're getting just more and more positive responses to Reiki. I'm actually pleased to see more and more clinical people, nurses and doctors, beginning to also notice the benefits of Reiki. For in hospice work, we find, or I've seen that the calming effects that can be provided for not only the patient, but also I sometimes provide Reiki to the spouse or to the family, other family members mm-hmm. who are supporting their loved one as they prepare to die. Reiki can bring benefits from those around the patient as well.
And we don't know for sure why that is, but I do realize, and doctors and scientists certainly can know that, medical professionals know that therapeutic touch, people need to be touched. It does have that calming effect and that sort of healing. I remember when I was 17 or 18, I had an operation done, and I had just gotten done, you know, I had the anesthesia and I was just coming out of it, and I was sitting on the bed with my mother and father, and I go, I'm getting out of here. And I stood up real quick, and the nurse was there. I felt so dizzy that I thought I was going to pass out, and I sat back down on the side of the bed, and the nurse started rubbing my back in circles. And all of a sudden, I felt this relief come over me, and I felt, you know, a little more settled. And so I guess that was my first
experience. Run away after that.
Yeah, because I'm not going anywhere, but I'm a little bit better. I think I'll just hang out here for a little while longer and let this wear off. But that was sort of my first experience with Reiki, you know, and I understand it as the universal life force, the vital essence or whatever, but it's really valid, I think, you know.
Oh, yeah. I think anyone who, you know, just want to get the message out that anyone can learn Reiki, anyone can develop their mediumistic sensitivities. These are gifts that are available to anyone.
That's right.
And it. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, some people are naturally gifted in some areas, just because you weren't having clairvoyant visions at the age of 4 doesn't mean you're not able to be a medium later in life. You can study these techniques, and it's just like developing gifts, like learning to play an instrument, musical instrument,
baseball, or whatever sport it is, tennis. Or,
it's practice,
studying it, and
discipline,
practicing it, discipline,
and understanding the technique, you know, whatever techniques are involved. But I wanted to share, in recent months, I've been having an interesting combination. I've been using Reiki with my patients, and sometimes while I'm in the process of sharing Reiki with a hospice patient, the patient and myself get a little bit of a clairvoyant vision where we sort of travel to a place where I'm thinking of one patient who just died a few weeks ago. He would drift off because Reiki is so relaxing. You know, oftentimes people look like they might be falling asleep, but I think they're going to a spiritual meditative place. I don't know if it's true trance, but they're relaxing to a place where they're maybe slightly disengaged from the physical world.
Okay.
And then they come back. You know, the typical Reiki treatment that I'm sharing might only be 15 minutes, 20 minutes,
mm-hmm.
but that's enough time for a real healing experience to occur.
Mm.
And when I say healing, obviously it doesn't mean the hospice patient is going to be miraculously cured. I'm talking about a spiritual healing, a healing for emotional reasons, or just bringing peace around them and their family as they prepare to die. So I'm beginning to see that the energy that we work with in Reiki is very complementary to the energy that flows in communication with mediumship and other forms of spirit communication.
Right. Lenner and I are working with, because we're both hypnotists, hypnotherapists, we're working with Reiki and hypnosis as a therapeutic technique, as a healing technique.
Yeah, that's a great
combination. And we're finding that mediumship is very much related to meditation and hypnosis. They're all sort of dropping down into the theta level and mm-hmm. into the, you know, where you're dropping down into your subconscious, where things are really happening, where the programming is, and working with that consciousness and making the healing happen there, or, you know, whatever effect you're trying to get, whether it's even with working with the with the universal energies and the subconscious level to get results, even in mediumship.
Yeah.
So it's really exciting, the things we've been working on like that, like you're describing.
That's very exciting to hear the combination of hypnotism and Reiki. Yeah.
And even other ideas that we're bringing into it.
Okay, well, we'll take a break now, I think, and then we'll return in about 5-10 minutes to talk about more about your hospice work and more about mediumship.
Yep, I know everybody wants to hear about your experience with loss and ideas on death. Okay, thank you. Welcome back to Universal Soul Love. This is David Love.
And this is Lana Love. And with us today is Reverend Mark Lyle. Mark, who is an interfaith minister and a medium himself, who works in hospices and in a psychiatric unit.
Good friend of mine.
Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Mark, I was wondering whether you could tell us more about what it's like to work among hospices, amongst the dying, and what sort of how that's had an effect on your view of life and death and beyond.
What kind of beliefs you've developed as a result, and how you deal with that, how you deal with people's losses and grief, and you know, issues around regret, and even you know your experiences with that.
One of the greatest benefits of working in hospice is it. I think it's deepened my appreciation of life. My coworkers, the nurses and social workers, and hospice aides, the nursing assistants, everyone I work with brings various gifts, but we all play a role in this life-enhancing assistance of someone as they're preparing for their transition. Now, when we receive a referral for someone who wants to come onto hospice, sometimes they maybe on our services for 24 hours because they were referred to us, you know, a little too late, and we do our best to make them comfortable. But the ideal situation is when we have a referral for someone who may have at least 2 or 3 weeks, and ideally, if we have more time, then the more meaningful experiences that I've experienced are the ones where we may have been able to get to know a patient for a period of months before they die, because then we get to know them a little bit more deeply. We get to know them. We have more time to hopefully talk with them or their family members and to help them work through all the emotions, to just process their lives in sharing stories. And what I also treasure is being able to ask somebody who's lived a long life, or even a hospice patient who's only 45 has a lot of life experience to talk about. Mm-hmm. But everyone who's lived on this earth plane has a unique set of experiences and mm-hmm. unique stories that mm-hmm. that we can learn from. So I know a lot of people think that working in hospice might be difficult, but it's my honest feeling is it's not any more difficult than just opening your heart and listening, because mm-hmm. that's predominantly the main focus of the chaplain mm-hmm. is to be someone who can listen mm-hmm. and to hold space with someone, to meet them wherever they are, because everyone is a unique soul, a unique individual. Mm-hmm. And I find some hospice patients are very much at peace with the idea that they're going to die, and others maybe are wishing that there was a little bit more the doctors could do to give them an extra year or 2 years, but it's not always possible. So then our role is to help them as best we can to come to peace with the physical reality that their physical body may not be able to sustain life for much longer. But then I try to find a way to reassure them that life will continue in some fashion mm-hmm. Without trying to just put my beliefs on them. I try to just open up conversations to let them share what their sense of the afterlife might look like, or what, getting back to Reiki, I'm thinking of a patient that I had just a couple months ago. He was a young man. He was only in his early 60s, and he had been a very strong, very vital man in his work life. So his illness came on fairly rapidly, and he did not have as much time as he and his wife might have wished. But in the course of providing Reiki to him, he was able to remain at home during his last weeks. And when I would visit him, and we also had a hospice volunteer who was trained in Reiki as well. And when we would provide Reiki, I think because he was such an open-minded individual, the Reiki journeys that he experienced were very deep and very spiritual for him. He would come back from after the 20 or 25 minute experiences, and I remember him coming out, it was almost like he had just come back from another place, and he said, he would say, "Wow, wow," and I would say, "What did you experience?" He would just say, "Oh, it was just so peaceful." And so I felt like he was beginning to get glimpses that were reassuring him that this
of life after life.
Yeah, and I think this is what happens with so many of our elderly who have dementia. They're oftentimes in an in-between state.
Right.
They're obviously they're here in the physical world, but because their brains are not functioning, not allowing them to function fully in engaging with this world, their spirits, I believe, are able to sort of get a glimpse of where they might be headed,
right,
at the same time that they are aware of, on some level, of what's taking place here. if their loved ones are visiting, even if they cannot communicate verbally clearly anymore, mm-hmm. I try to encourage the family to continue talking to them, to continue sharing stories and good memories, because I believe that the person with dementia or Alzheimer's disease is taking in all the love and the stories and the verbal communication.
Yeah, that's your subconscious. You're always receiving information and impressions from the outer world, no matter what, even if we're not aware of it right now, our subconscious is taking in information. And that part that you mentioned about parts of people's spirits being in other places with Alzheimer's, my higher self calls that splitting, mm-hmm. that consciousness can split, and which is why we are a collective consciousness. We are unique personalities, but there's that oneness. You know, we're separate but equal. So we're unique personalities within the whole, like drops of water in the ocean of consciousness. And so right. consciousness is able to do that. We have shared consciousness.
We do. We can. And I believe I'm actually quite interested in exploring whether we can use telepathy to communicate with individuals who have dementia, to be able to, in other words, to transmit our thoughts mentally through the spiritual connection that we use a mediumship. Mm-hmm. So it's communicating not verbally as much as sending out a thought wave that might be shared. And if someone's open to receiving information that way, they might be able to communicate connect. Back and forth with us, which then will get around the barriers of dementia and Alzheimer's.
Yeah,
certainly. My mother's got dementia. She's got end-stage dementia.
I'm so sorry.
And,
yeah.
She was always a very vibrant person, and so obviously it's heartbreaking to see her yeah. deteriorate like that, but it's very reassuring to know and to think that her spirit is completely untouched by it. And certainly I have found that I seem to communicate by telepathy with her, not so much when she's not so much when I'm in the room with her, mm-hmm. but at other places, it's like her spirit is around me. It's
yeah.
Sometimes when I'm next to her body, it's like her spirit isn't there, but it's like her spirit is around me, and I, mm. you know, will often communicate with her.
I think I've even picked up on her before, mm. you know, mm. her presence a couple times. Yeah, it's really interesting how that works. Even I also learned, you know, through my own psychic download or insights, even people with developmental disabilities, I don't know what time they called them, mentally retarded, they mm-hmm. have a lot of labels, anyhow, intellectual disabilities, people who are nonverbal or who seem profoundly mentally retarded, they appear to be as if they're of lower intellect, but the truth is even if they can't verbalize their thoughts, their spirit is perfect. There's mm-hmm. a perfectly intelligent human being under the physical, you know, under the flesh, that's just as, that can communicate just as well as you, us three are right now. Exactly. Your spirit is intact as much as anyone else's, and we don't realize that. And this is what consciousness is all about. We look at animals and we say, it's a lower life form. It's not as technologically advanced as we are. It doesn't go to university. It doesn't have these great ideas, a squirrel or an Australia or a wallaby, whatever it happens to be. Those animals are just as intelligent as we are. Intelligence isn't necessarily about degrees or, you know.
In fact, that's a human-centric point of view, isn't it?
Right. Very much so, yeah.
So we have our a lot of false beliefs and a lot of limiting beliefs about the world. And there's so much that we don't know, and this is why we're here talking about these things and sharing these ideas. And I think it's really nice to be able to just be very open to these things and consider them.
As you're talking, David, I just wanted to illustrate maybe one more example of a hospice patient I'm currently visiting. This is a gentleman who lives not far from the town where I live, but his daughter, the patient's daughter, is a coworker of mine in hospice. And so it's been an honor to serve her father and to get to know him over the past months. He's fortunate again. He gets to live at home, and the room that he spends most of his time in is this sunny, orange, glowing room it glows with the sunlight that comes in, but it glows mostly with the love of his daughters. Mm-hmm. And he's got the most beautiful dog, which was a rescued dog that's always by his side. A beautiful rescued cat that is in the room. Beautiful parakeets or budgies. Uh-huh. And so this hospice patient has little by little lost his ability to communicate verbally, but his eyes and his smile communicate the love that he feels that he's receiving, and he communicates that love back, and you can see it so clearly coming from him. So when I visit, I also provide him with Reiki, and then his daughters also love to talk about the pleasant memories of their mother and all the great times the family had together. And then we also talk about spiritual life after death, ideas about what it means to be spirit. And then we invite the patient's wife, who died about, I think she died about 15 years ago. Uh-huh. And the daughters sometimes feel her presence with them. So I think in a lot of ways, life is about appreciating the present and and appreciating the past, the good past memories, and healing any of the unresolved things that we might want the patient or the family to be able to resolve or heal.
I'm glad you're leading into that.
Yeah.
About healing and forgiveness. That's so important. My father was also, had dementia, and it just came on so suddenly. He could no longer walk. He had a feeding tube. He got dementia. And at some point, we all have, growing up, we all have these negative memories. A lot of us have traumatic experiences as children. All have issues with our parents, most of us. And we carry those. Without letting them go, we hold those grudges, and they could be deep down and in the subconscious. And I know at one point when I saw my father, and he wasn't present totally the way he used to be, and this was just before he died, I went to the nursing home and I held his hand and I said, Dad, I want you to go in peace, because I knew he was regretting things and he had guilt in his life, and he was worried about us. He was worried about his children and what they were going to do. And, when you get older, you tend to spend a lot of time thinking about things and regretting things. And I said, Dad, I just want you to go in peace. I want you to feel free. I don't want you to have guilt going into the next world. It's really important that you let go of those things.
It's beautiful.
And,
That's a lovely.
It's one of the best gifts you could give somebody, is to allow forgiveness, to share forgiveness. Mm.
And it's good for yourself, and it's good for them, and it's good for the world to forgive. Because prior to that, I had this experience in my mind where I was healing things with my dad, and I saw the image in my mind of this. But I saw it healing on other levels, other realities, and I saw that as I was healing and forgiving this life, other lives and other realities were being healed. And it's almost like a ripple effect, that when you heal relationships, it goes out into the world and it heals on so many other levels of other existences almost. So it's really important that we let go of things, and it just allow people to be free, and allow yourself to be free, and allow peace to reign, really. And that's why this, coming to terms with death is so important, I think, and your work is so important.
Well, we do see some hospice patients that they go into the phase of actively dying, where their breathing has changed. They're not eating or taking in liquids, but for some reason they're hanging on. And oftentimes it is, they're waiting for that child to arrive, for that to have the chance to say goodbye, or for that maybe their family member for them to say goodbye. Mm-hmm. There does seem to be a need to tie up some loose ends sometimes.
Do you remember one of my experiences? You weren't actually there, but there was a military man, a retired military man, that I used to go visit in the nursing home at your hospice, and I'd been seeing him for about 6 weeks, and he was very much with Alzheimer's, and mm-hmm. he used to think that he was back in the military in Japan and in Germany, and he would talk about that, and he would say, "I'm going to Germany to see such and such a person," and you know, I'd let him talk, and he would tell me about what he was going to be doing, and then at one point I remember I walked in to see him, to visit him, and I saw the nurses with him, and they were trying to get him up for lunch, and I was just standing there in the room, and all of a sudden the nurse goes, "I think he's gone." Sure enough, you know, I was standing there and he was no longer there, and it was almost like he was in the room, you know, his spirit was in the room, and it was almost like he was waiting for me to get there. He must have died just before I walked in the door. He died when I got there, as the nurses were getting him up for lunch. They thought he was sleeping. No, he was gone. And I just stood there in the room alone, and I actually just, I picked up his, I don't know if this was morbid, but I actually just picked up his hand and shook his hand, and I said, "Congratulations, you made it. Go on and live a good, eternal life, you know, and, you called me later on, and I was okay, you know. You know, it was kind of hard because I had just started to get to know him, and it was really hard to get to know somebody with Alzheimer's.
Right.
Because mentally they weren't in the present with you. They were wherever he was in his mind or in the universe. That's all unexplainable, but that's what happened. That was one of my experiences.
Timing is interesting. There's no doubt that the transition at the end of life is a sacred time. It's a time of mystery that I still don't fully understand. Sometimes our patients pass relatively quickly, and then other times I've had patients that I thought were only hours away from dying hang on for another 2 weeks. So there's definitely a something in the letting go of the physical form that's not as simple or as easy as we might like it to be sometimes. But, you know, when you consider how many layers of experiences and emotions and physical sensations are built in this world, I guess it makes sense that it's not a simple letting go all the time.
And presumably part of your work is to allow people to let go?
Well, yes. In fact, I'd like to think that we try to assist in that letting go process, but it is a mystery. And I'm actually enrolled in an advanced Reiki workshop coming up in March, which is being offered by the John Harvey Gray Center for Reiki Healing, Center for Healing. It's entitled Walking with the Dead, or Walking the Dead, using Reiki to help in those final transitions.
It's interesting, you know, you were saying that one of the things that really helps the dying is being shown that there is something out there, that there is a life beyond life. I was thinking, though, that the other really important factor is probably the kindness and the human presence that is there for them, to assist them in dying.
I would like to think that we bringing compassion and comfort is a reassuring aspect of hospice work. And, you know, unfortunately, for many of our nursing home patients, their family members may live several states away, or maybe even thousands of miles away. So the hospice team and the staff of the, if they're at a long-term care center, are the primary visitors that person receives.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, we've got about 5 minutes left, and in the time that we've got left, I'd love you to tell us a bit more about your mediumship. You said that, Mark, that you've been developing this for about 23 years and that you have your own star circle.
That's right. So I began to study mediumship 1992, and I was just very intrigued by the thought of being able to develop these sensitivities. So as I've begun to study and continued, I've been interested in developing my abilities to draw portraits of spirit communicators. So that's something I'm currently working on, as well as to bring my fine arts background into drawing a recognizable image of who it is that's coming through. And one of the most famous artist mediums was Coral Polge in England. And I got to see her working in London the year before she died. She was remarkably accurate in her gift. So that's what I'm endeavoring to do, is to get to allow my drawings to be even more accurate, more recognizable, so that someone who looks at the drawing might recognize, you know, that's my grandmother, or that's or that's the woman I worked with at, you know, my former company, or something like that.
And what's that like for you, developing those skills?
It's challenging, because I'm practicing delivering a verbal message from the spirit communicator while I'm drawing. So I'm working on a couple levels at the same time.
It's tricky.
It can be, and I'm, you know, my standards, I'm not satisfied with my results all the time.
Perfectionist. So,
yes, I admit I'm a perfectionist.
Yeah, we all are, aren't we?
Yeah, but the Star Circle is a development group where about a dozen of us get together on a regular basis to practice our development of mediumship skills. And we are also helping a couple of mediums develop trance message mediumship, so where they go into a more of a trance-like state to allow communication to come directly through them. So the spirit is actually using their physical voice box.
Traditional channeling.
Yeah, it's more traditional channeling as opposed to mental mediumship, where the medium sees an image or hears something clairaudiently and relays, conveys the message.
To the
So the medium has to actually translate what they're receiving
can make things a little more difficult. Well, we don't. Mediumship is all about continuity of life and confirmation of that, of the afterlife. Unfortunately, we don't have time to do that. But we will have, maybe we can have you back on with the mediumship circle or something.
Oh, that would be
really
be
exciting.
So interesting.
And I know we have a couple more mediums that I've connected with recently.
Yeah. Maybe we could have an on-radio seance.
That would be interesting to try.
Thank you for coming on our show.
Yeah, really great having you on. Mark? I'm really glad we got to reconnect.
Again, Mark's website is star-circle.us.
That's right.
Right.
Thank you very much for having me on your show. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome. Okay.
So we'll see you next time on Universal Soul Love.
Bye now.
Bye.